Matthew chapter 5 and at verse 43, Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, 'Love your neighbour and hate your enemy.' But I tell you, love your enemies." Love your enemies. Okay, so this sermon carries a congregational health warning, which goes like this. The following sermon contains revelations about your pastor which do not show him in a good light. Okay? Just so you know. I had an uncomfortable revelation myself riding my bike a couple of weeks ago. Mountain bikers are a very persecuted breed. I don't know if you recognise that. On the roads, that's where we like to be off-road, but when we're on the roads having to ride to our off-road route, we seem to attract motorists who want to see how close they can pass us and how fast they can go as they pass us without actually knocking us off our bikes. Which for them is a trivial matter, but for us is actually quite a frightening experience sometimes. On the tracks, we're persecuted by walkers, but that's another story. I'll not mention it. So there I was a couple of weeks ago. I was on the road, a single track, piece of road, and a car came up behind me. We were between passing places, and the law of the land says that I ride my bike up to the next passing place and slow down and let the car behind pass me. But the car behind wasn't interested in the law of the road. As often happens, the car behind thought he would try and squeeze past me anyway. And I reckon that if I can reach out my hand like that and touch the car as it passes, then it's passing me far too close. Far too close. And this one was like that. It was far too close. And also the danger in the situation is entirely for the cyclist. It's not for the driver. The cyclist is knocked off, he could be seriously injured. The motorist, on the other hand, will be unscathed every time. So it's really good to see on the television just now the current advertising campaign aimed at this very particular kind of behaviour and curbing it. I think in the future the danger is only going to increase because electric bikes are becoming more and more vogue, so people are actually riding their bikes faster. And when you're riding along quite fast, you get this whistling in your ear, so you can't hear cars coming up behind you so easily. And in the future, most of those cars are going to be electric, so they're going to be very quiet. So you won't hear them. So it's going to be even more dangerous in the future. But back to the story. After this person had squeezed past me, I took note of their number plate. And I contemplated what I would say to them if I caught up with them. I even began to think of the pleasure I might take in damaging their paintwork. Revenge. I'm very grateful to God that I didn't catch up with that car again. Probably, I hope the grace of God would have kept me from doing anything of my vengeful plans, but as I continued on my ride, had to pray, and I quite often have to do this for this very reason, for forgiveness for my vengeful attitude. What was I doing? I was thinking, as verse 38 says, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You put me in danger, then I'll do something to upset you. And as I was praying in that way, I kind of sensed God saying to me, "Roddy, you should love that driver." I don't know who it was. It wasn't a local. Actually, the locals are the worst. But it wasn't a local. You should love that driver. And my kind of heart response, "But Lord, they don't deserve that love for treating me that way." To which, in a sense, the Lord was saying, "Well, then, if that's what you think, you don't believe the words of Jesus." And that's what I felt deeply challenged. You don't believe that you should follow Jesus in this issue. You don't believe that Jesus' way is the right way. Maybe it doesn't make sense to you in this situation, and you're not believing it. And that was deeply challenging. Jesus' way is not an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Jesus' way is love your enemies. And that's an entirely different value set for us to live by. Do you believe that tonight? Does it even make sense to you? And do you see that even if it doesn't make sense to you, you should still do it because Jesus taught it? Just because Jesus taught it, even if it doesn't make sense, you should still do it. Let's start with verse 39. Do you believe what Jesus says there? I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you in the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Straight off, when we read that, we go, don't really find that one easy. But then we must recognize, for a start, Jesus isn't saying allow an evil person to abuse a third party. In other words, he's not saying don't prevent an assault on someone else if you can prevent it. That's not what he's saying. Okay, so that's very important to be clear. He's talking about someone who hits you. So it's just between you and the person. For whatever reason they hit you, Jesus says, don't land them one back. Why? Love your enemies. Because even though they strike you, and your flesh instinct is to hit them back, at least that's mine anyway, even though they do that, you are loving your enemy. You're thinking, what is the best for this person who's just hit me? And what is the best for that person is not that you affirm their violence by being violent yourself, but that you keep the door open to teach them about Jesus. You know that this man who's just hit you for a needless cause will be paid back for that on the day of judgment. God will take care of that. You know that God teaches in the words of Romans 12, do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it's written, and God says this, it's mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. So, you know, it's up to God to repay vengeance. But then, you don't want that person to experience the vengeance of God. You want them to be saved. You want them to know God's forgiveness and mercy. Well, if you hit them back, you're never going to be able to tell them about God's mercy. But if you don't hit them back, and even you're prepared to let them hit you again, you've left the door open for you to explain to them why your behavior is different to what they expected. They may say, well, why are you not retaliating? Because God will do that. But I don't want you to be a recipient of God's retaliation, God's judgment. You need Jesus Christ. You want to be able to find ways to say that to people who are being violent without cause. Who do you know tonight that was like that? Who didn't strike back in order to make salvation possible for those who were striking him? Who do you know who did that? Well, Jesus, of course. He taught this here, and he practiced it. He believed it, and he practiced it. Matthew 26, verse 67, then the chief priests and the Sanhedrin spat in Jesus' face and struck him with their fists, and others slapped him. Jesus didn't strike back. Matthew 15, verse 19, again and again the soldiers struck him on the head with a staff and spat on him. Jesus didn't strike back. As Peter says, reflecting on that, Peter watched it happen. He says, when they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. Jesus in not retaliating when he could have done, paved the way for salvation for these people. Our society may operate on a retaliation basis. It may operate on an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and it does. And that's a lot better than what went before it. Because when this law, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, came along through Moses, it was to replace the previous law, which was escalation of violence. So someone did something small to someone else's family, that family retaliated with something worse, and then that family returned with something worse still until they were all annihilated. That wasn't the way it should be. But we've got a better still. Love your enemies. Christ loved his enemies. And when the Christian loves his enemy or her enemy, we're not giving them what they deserve, because we hope to show them the salvation of God. Now, you'd love then to get the chance, for me for example, to tell the person who nearly knocked me off my bike about Jesus. You'd love to get that chance. That's the attitude Jesus is telling me to have. That if you do catch up with that person, and maybe just a wee knock on the window and they're thinking you're going to give them a mouthful, and you just find a way and say, you know, what you did back there was quite dangerous, but I just want you to know, Jesus loves you, and he died for you. Okay, that's the kind of thing. That sounds a bit corny maybe, but actually, that kind of very thing can be powerful in God's hands. Jesus is calling people who wrong us to repent and to receive forgiveness. What a powerful thing it is if Christians can be who are the very ones who are wronged, can be the very ones who tell the people who wrong them about the way of salvation in Jesus, and who get the chance to do that because they didn't retaliate, because they didn't take revenge, because they didn't do an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. So we ask ourselves, do we believe this? Do we believe that we should follow Jesus' teaching here? And we ask ourselves, are we actually practicing that teaching ourselves towards those who are wronging us just now? Well, let's ask what happens if we don't practice this. Let's ask what happens if we go for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. If we do that, then we'll get angry a lot. When people wrong you, and your default position is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, then you'll get angry at them. You'll want to get back at them, get even with them. And if you can't do that, which often we really can't, it'll simmer in your heart, that anger. And that anger may erupt in destructive ways, ways that are damaging to you and damaging to the people around you as well. And also, on a spiritual level, if you don't live by Jesus here, but instead you think of how you could get even, what you're saying is that I live by the law that says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. People should get what they deserve. That's what you're saying. But is that what you want? Because Jesus is teaching you to love your enemies, and you're not doing that. So you deserve punishment for not doing what Jesus says. You deserve God's anger. Do you want God to give you what you deserve? If your argument is people should get what they deserve, what happens when you do wrong? God is angry, but God is justly angry. And you might say, well, so am I. So am I about the things that are upsetting me. So am I. But there's a difference between you and God. God is the judge of all the earth, and you're not. He is ready to forgive, and you're not. He sent his son to die for the sins of the people who are wronging him. What have you done for the people who are wronging you, but just want them to pay just want them to get what they deserve. So I'm challenged by my lack of practical belief in what Jesus is saying here. And I should not let the sun go down in my anger, as Paul says, but forgive and leave room to share the gospel. Leave room for God to judge the situation and set things right. I'm not God, though. That's not my job. But again, you might say, but you want to get even. You might say, how does God get to avenge? Why does he get to avenge, but he won't let us? Well, there's a difference between God and us. God can judge. And God can make right judgment. You just can't. You cannot make right judgment. It's impossible for you to judge a situation correctly. You just can't do it. That's why Jesus says, do not judge. You cannot judge a situation correctly. That person who's wronged you, you do not know the story. You do not know their motivations. You do not know what they're going through. You do not know the state of their mind. You do not know the situations that they're dealing with. You don't know the bigger picture. You don't know that. You can't judge the situation. And if you want to judge, it's because you don't love. But God does love his enemies. Jesus teaches that in verse 44. Verse 45. Love your enemies, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And he holds out the offer of forgiveness through Jesus. In the end, righting the injustices of history rests with him. He will judge, but also he loves and he's ready to save and to forgive. And we must be the same. So, a couple of days after my little incident with the unpleasant overtaker, I had another chance to have my attitudes towards bad driving challenged. So this happened on Wednesday of last week. So anyway, I was travelling through Tinverness and I was on the long straights at Achnesheen. And I came up behind a German car. I know it was a German car. I don't know whether it was a German driver or not, so I'm not judging the nationality of the driver, but it certainly had a German number plate with a big D on it, you know. And it was a powerful German car. Anyway, I was going a little bit faster in this car, and so when it came to a clear straight, I pulled out to overtake. Bizarrely, driver of German car accelerated as I pulled out, and had a lot more under his bonnet than I had, and I couldn't catch him. And so I pulled in again, and he slowed back down to the speed he was doing, which was a little slower than I wanted to be going. So we came up to the next straight, and the road was clear. I pulled out to overtake again. He did the same thing. I think it was a he. And in fact, it must be a he, because a she wouldn't do something like that. He put his foot down. I couldn't catch him. Off he went. Suddenly he's doing 90 miles an hour. I was nowhere near him. And then as soon as I pulled back in, he slowed right back down. And I came behind. It was actually quite bizarre. The next thing, this tradesman in a red van came steaming up behind me, overtook me, and I thought, right, this is going to be interesting. Is he going to overtake the German car? And he did. For some reason, he just pulled out. The German car let him pass, and off he went. And I thought, now I'm beginning to feel persecuted. I don't know what the explanation was. Perhaps it was a German driver who saw that a French car, my Peugeot, was about to overtake him. And he didn't like that. I don't know. But I can't say that I felt charitable towards the German car driver. So, I didn't try again to overtake this person, and we came eventually to Garve. And as we came into Garve, I made sure I was under 40 miles an hour, but he was well over 40, and I couldn't help but hoping in my heart that the policeman was sitting there. But no, the policeman was not sitting there in his usual spot. So So on the other side of Garb, I caught up with him at a traffic light for roadworks. And the temptation was, of course, to get out of the car and knock on his window and say, "What in the world are you doing?" in my best German. Thankfully, by this time, I was at about my fifth prayer for forgiveness for my wrong attitudes towards this German car driver. And thankfully, I stayed put and didn't do anything stupid. I really struggled with that, you know, and I couldn't get that out of my head for the rest of my drive to Inverness. It just really riled me, that kind of behaviour. Do I love my enemies? My initial thought in the situation was to get even in some way. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But that driver needs Christ, not justice. That driver needs Christ. And I've got to ask myself, do I believe that the way Jesus is teaching here is better for that driver than my way, the way of the flesh, which is, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Do I love my enemies? That's the challenge. You'll come up against situations like that all the time too. Jesus reinforces his teaching in verses 40 to 42. Let's just quickly look at that. Verse 40. If someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let them have your cloak as well. People didn't have much in those days of Jesus, and sometimes your clothes were sometimes just about your only possession if you were a labourer. But what Jesus is saying is people need to see that we as Christians live by different values. They may be very materialistic, and people generally are very materialistic. Generally, property matters a great deal to people, and if they live like property is the really important thing in their lives, they will lose everything when they die, because they have nothing of eternal value if it's just about their property. And if it's just about them saying, I want your cloak, or I want your tunic, or I want your money, or whatever. Jesus is saying, show them a better way. Show them that Jesus matters more than material things. And perhaps they'll be challenged, perhaps they'll be changed. Challenging teaching that. And in verse 41, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Now this is a real challenge, because Jesus is addressing the situation of the Roman occupation here. Roman soldiers had a right in Roman law to commandeer anyone they came across to carry their kit for a mile. You see that, for example, when Simon of Cyrene is compelled by the Roman soldiers to carry the cross of Jesus. Jesus can't carry it, he hasn't got the strength. So the soldiers are going to have to carry it, but they can't be bothered, so they just commandeer someone to carry the cross, Simon of Cyrene. And the Jews greatly resented this. They really resented that the Romans would do that, use their superior force to compel people to carry their luggage. So the Romans were the enemy. They were the ones who the Jews thought, anyway, the self-righteous Jews thought, deserved judgment. So if you, as a Jew, Jesus is teaching Jews here, instead of resentfully carrying that burden for precisely 1 mile and saying, right, you've got what the law says you can have, you're not getting another bit, you then say, can I carry it for another mile? That really is to love your enemy. And it really is a great demonstration of a different kind of attitude. And no doubt many Jewish people hearing this sermon strongly disagreed with what Jesus was teaching here. But what about us? Do we disagree? The Romans needed salvation too. In this act of grace where you're carrying, where you're going the extra mile, as we say, the Roman soldier may come to a point to say, why did you do that? Which is always a question Christians should be delighted to be asked if we've done something good. Because it's a way where we can tell about Jesus and the change he's done in our lives. And it gives us that opportunity. So we don't want to be like Jonah. You know, Jonah can't wait for his enemies to be destroyed. He hates the thought of God showing them mercy. We want to be like Jesus here, and we want to do anything we can, however costly to us, however humiliating to us, just to be able to have the chance to show the mercy of Jesus to other people. If you've been following the readings the Free Church has put out, you'd have come to Acts 16 a few days ago. And I was really challenged in that chapter by Paul and Silas. And they didn't exercise their right when they're put on trial and they're going to be beaten, remember, in Philippi. They have the rights as Roman citizens to say, stop, you can't beat us, we're Roman citizens, you've got to put us on trial and have a proper judicial process before you do anything to us. They don't do that. Amazingly, they let themselves be beaten. And they don't insist on using their Roman citizenship. Why? Well, I believe it is in order to get the people of Philippi on side for the gospel. They actually were prepared to be beaten in order to give a hearing for the gospel in Philippi. And so it turned out. A church came out of that. That's how much they were prepared to turn the other cheek or to go the extra mile for the sake of the salvation of other people. So just bringing this up to a close, my failure in these two stories to completely exemplify loving my enemy, it shows me that the salvation is something that the salvation I want to be able to offer to other people is something I need myself. The salvation I need myself. I need to be saved from an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And if that is the only law that I apply to other people and they apply to me, then life's going to be barren. Life's going to be tough. And if God applies that law to me, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, I'll never live in his favour. I'm spiritually finished. So we need a different way. The way of Jesus is challenging. The way of Jesus might not even make sense in many situations. But we need to live that way because the people who may be wronging us need salvation. And we want to be able to tell them about Jesus. So we need grace. We need love. We need forgiveness. We need salvation. We need mercy. We need to live as people who don't let our own personal agendas get in the way of the salvation of other people. All for Jesus. God, have mercy on us then. And help us to live as Jesus teaches here, even in situations where it just doesn't seem to make sense, doesn't even seem to be right or just. We leave the justice to God and we seek the salvation of our enemies, of the people who wrong us, because we want to treat them with the mercy with which we hope to be treated by God himself. Amen.